The Institute on Religious Life and the Daughters of St. Mary of Providence of Chicago bring you the following lecture in a series of lectures given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. on the theme, The History of Religious Life. Father John Hardin is a professor of theology at St. John's University in New York. He is a well-known lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises, and is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin is the author of many articles and books, including Holiness in the Church and the Catholic Catechism, which has been strongly endorsed by Holy Mother Church. In the following lecture, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, St. Vincent de Paul and the Apostolate of Christian Charity. Father Hardin.
First, looking at your chart, you wonder what else is there to write about Vincent de Paul. His principal biographer is Coste Leonard, Coste, and then in the English translation, Leonard, in 13 volumes for the correspondence, the conferences, and the documents relative to his especially foundation of the two orders or communities of both men and women. Then his life, a superb piece of hagiography in 3 volumes. I read it, I think, in the novitiate, and I've been using things from that 3 volumes ever since. It is a very authentic biography. He draws on sources that can be verified, that can be documented, and we even have, as you would expect, many of the manuscripts of both Vincent himself and, of course, of St. Louise de Marillac, so that we are in immediate contact with the origins of this great spirituality. Some highlights of Vincent de Paul's biography. First of all, he lived to a good age, to be exact, 80. He began as a parish priest, and it was because he was a parish priest that he saw the social needs of the people in a way that he might never have seen them had he been in, say, academic or administrative life in his early priesthood. He was, and this is good to hear, both counseled and inspired by St. Francis de Sales, what I call the genealogy of the Spirit, or the genealogy of sanctity. Saints reproduce saints. That's why I've been suggesting to you and people that I teach, expose yourself to the company of the saints daily. It helps. Not that we don't think that our living mortal company is saintly, but let's be honest. It is hard sometimes to see the heroic virtue among our contemporaries. In any case, Francis de Sales quite made Vincent de Paul. The sequence of his apostolic endeavors is pretty much in that order that given in your notes. The reason, by the way, that he could engage in such a wide and far-flung apostolic enterprise is because he had early become the confidant of the royalty. He made sure, and he was a shrewd man, that if I'm going to do the work better, if the work that needs to be done for the galley slaves, for the poor, the sick, the foundlings, the beggars, I better have both the authority and the resources. and he went to the top. In any case, Vincent was a shrewd man. He knew you needed somebody to back you, to protect you, and you need the means. In fact, the very word means, what is the first thought that comes to your mind when we talk about having the necessary means to carry out apostolic work? What's the first thought that comes to your mind? Cash, money. Now, we know theologically they're not the most important means. Agreed? In any case, Vincent de Paul was a hard-headed realist. His, I dare say, is the most down-to-earth spirituality you're going to consider in these two semesters. In time, he discovered that the great needs, the social needs of the people, were minor compared to their spiritual needs. And there he felt that if I'm going to do what needs to be done for the faithful, I must help the priests. And ever since, as you know, the Vincentians have been strong in operating seminaries. For example, the St. Louis Kendrick Seminary is conducted by the Vincentians, just to mention one. Moreover, realizing that with a small number of men that he had, if he wants to do the work among the faithful that is necessary, we need to have a lot of them gathered together, and hence he started what is now called the popular or parish mission. There's almost nothing in modern times that Vincent somehow didn't start. And all the while, he sensed from the beginning, I must find among that segment of the faithful that is most concerned about people's needs, even most naturally compassionate. Hence, he brought women into the apostolate soon. So much for that part. I would like to, at this point, give you a little rundown of his biography, just so that we can put into better focus what will follow, especially in analyzing his spirituality. His background was of a peasant family. In other words, he understood hardship. He also, interestingly, was captive under the Moorish pirates, managed to escape after 2 years, which then helped him to become more sympathetic with people who were in captivity in jail. It was his work of charity, especially for the poor, that led to the foundation of first the Ladies of Charity and then the Daughters of Charity. By the time of his death, he was directing 11 seminaries. And among the unusual characters of history who strongly befriended him and helped him in his work was Richelieu. As you know, the French not so saintly cardinal. Now the foundations. First of all, the Congregation of the Mission. There are four names given to it that you have on your outline. Lazarus, because it had been a leprosarium, and the word Lazarus, the name is associated with his having been a leper. The Padres Paules, taken from the last part of Vincent de Paul's name. Vincentians, from the first part of his name. And the official title, CM, Congregation of the Mission. It is, in one sense, satisfying. On the other hand, it's also sad to think that the seminaries that Vincent de Paul organized, first in France and in time throughout the world, were not organized until, well, the first quarter or so of the 17th century. The Council of Trent finished in 1563. About 50 years it took for the Council of Trent's legislation to take effect. Sad. When the main reason for the Reformation was the dense ignorance of the priests. The Congregation of the Mission, as the name implies, was mainly founded to give missions, but also to conduct seminaries and to assist the Daughters of Charity in their social apostolate. The Ladies of Charity were lay people originally started by Louise de Marillac. They were both married and single women, and they were not religious. May I, as I go over this, because one of the problems in covering so much matter at the time at our disposal is that in the effort to cover a man like here, Vincent de Paul, we're liable to miss the lessons that he has to teach us. I believe, I'm not sure whether it's the greatest, but certainly one of the greatest defects of religious communities in the church today is the fact that they have not associated with themselves lay people to extend, carry on, and give an outreach to their both effort to sanctify and to do the work of corporal and spiritual work of mercy, which no religious community can possibly cope with by itself. It's a mistake, and a grave one. Have I talked in some context about the danger to religious communities in having so many lay people work with you and among you? Did I talk about that? Sisters, I know exactly what I am saying. Now, the danger is not inherent in having lay people work, can't they? It is in being in such constant and intimate contact with worldly people. And the more the state breathes down our back, as you know, insisting on you name it what, especially increased personnel, the more we've got to look, as Vincent de Paul looked, to developing and cultivating a devoted lay people to work with the community without being members of the community. And for him, that's how the women, who eventually became the Daughters of Charity, started. Then, the Daughters of Charity. As you would expect, even if you didn't know who were the wealthy matrons and who were the servant girls, what would you guess? The servant girls would be the daughters, and the wealthy matrons would be, well, you guessed it, the ladies. The first women's community engaged outside the cloister in active apostolic work, approved by the Holy See, that opened the door to all other women's congregations since, listen to this, were the servant girls of these ladies. All right? Talk about God using the little things, right? Why didn't God make villages out of the ladies? Two guesses. One, they were ladies. And secondly, they had money. One of the most incredible letters I've ever read, written by a saint, was by St. Robert Bellarmine, written to a community of nuns in his diocese. He was Archbishop of Capua, and he heard these are all very fine ladies that had founded a community. Their foundress was a lady. But he found out, he heard they were discriminating about the social status of the girls they would accept. And Robert was a gentle soul, but he used the strongest possible language, and telling these dames, my dear sisters in Christ, from all I hear, I am sure that the Mother of God would not have been accepted into your community. She was too lowbrow. This is good to hear, isn't it? Vincent de Paul built under the influence of grace on servant girls, on maids, on washerwomen. All right? Anytime we get big ideas, speaking feminine gender to you, remember, it was servant girls that started modern apostolic religious women's institutes. God didn't start with the ladies. He chose servants. They were then originally helpers of the ladies of charity. Humble girls who had no aspiration whatever. The last thing they thought they would ever become was a religious institute. Who are they? Too little, too unimportant. Sisters, stay little, stay unimportant in your own eyes, then you've got a chance. Originally, we know Vincent did not intend them to be religious. Well, they were just what they were. The cooks and the washerwomen and the cleaners and the sweepers, the ladies, who were good souls. Don't misunderstand me. But they just were not material for a religious community. The ladies. Their main focus was on the corporal works of mercy, notably four that I identified: hospitals, the poor, foundlings, and to give shelter. Hospitals, by the way, existed centuries before. In fact, in case anybody ever asks you, how did hospitals ever come into existence? Very simple. The Catholic Church created all the hospitals in the world. Many by now, sadly, are not Catholic, even by the wildest stretch of the imagination. But, as Vincent discovered then, and we should be discovering now, to operate a hospital by the standards of the gospel, you've got to have some very dedicated persons. The poor. The statement of Christ about our having the poor always is a revealed prophecy. All right? He will always have the poor. And God makes sure there's enough of the poor to give those who have more or can find ways of helping them to engage in the apostolate. Come to think of it, suppose there were no sick people. Suppose there were no poor people. Suppose there weren't people who needed shelter and care and attention. What, pray tell, would happen to the apostolic work of the church? Foundlings, as you know by now, would to God we had more foundlings. You know what happens to the foundlings that used to be? When I was in Boston over the weekend, the newly appointed editor of the National Register came into Boston. We spent a couple of hours together in very useful conversation. Married, not too many years, but has no children of his own. He's adopted one and is now negotiating for a second. And he told me that to adopt their first child, they've been active in the pro-life work. And a girl who had planned an abortion shortly after she discovered she was pregnant was discouraged from abortion, but he told me his wife had to work on this girl for something like 6 or 7 months to keep the baby alive. And finally, in gratitude, when she delivered the child, she gave it to the woman who convinced her she should keep it. Isn't that beautiful? We now in the Catholic Church need religious institutes of women to cooperate with a pro-life movement. Am I making sense? A lot of good work is being done. Two men had breakfast meet with me today. I had to tell Sister to, well, fry a few more eggs. They're both active in the pro-life work. And since I know some wealthy people, they thought that I could help them get some money for their pro-life work. These are two businessmen. But the solution, as you know, and we're talking about the foundlings in Vincent's day, is to provide care and attention for these girls. It's one thing, as the women who stand outside these abortion mills tell me, it's one thing to dissuade the girl from having an abortion. Yeah, but that doesn't solve her problem. We don't solve the pro-life problem or abortion by more speeches or more books or more amendments to the Constitution. We will solve the diabolical murdering of over 1 million children in the United States only when somebody finds dedicated women of the kind that Vincent found in the 17th century. And I hope you believe me. And I'm sorry to say we don't have them. And finally, the shelter. Any of the brothers that are in class are perfect for this purpose. Taking care of both the retarded and shelter, giving food and lodging. In New York, it is estimated there are 10,000 homeless women walking the streets in New York City. And during the bitter cold that we had in New York, though it's generally milder, below zero, which was just for about 2 nights, extremely cold in New York, there was a man, as I was going wherever I was going, I was leaving the door, and I saw a man eating his tray there. One of the priests brought him a tray of food. So I stopped to chat with him for a minute, and I asked him how the food was. It was what we had. He says, it's good. He said, really? He says, you know what I want more than food? I need lodging for the night. Because where I am, there's no heat. Here's a man I'd see in his mid or late 70s. I'm afraid I'm going to freeze to death. Had a thin overcoat on him. And no heat. Whatever I was going to do, it cost me about 30 minutes of my time, but I feel it was well spent. Put in phone calls, and finally we got in 2 nights lodging, by which time the cold had passed away. Let no one deceive you. There are more people poor in need of food, clothing, shelter, and care today than most of us in affluent America, I'm afraid, are willing to admit. No, Vincent de Paul's spirituality. First of all, for Vincent, you begin to be spiritual when you distinguish your will from God's will. How's that? Do you know there are some people that don't even know those are two different wills? They're so accustomed to doing what they want and are sure it's what God wants that they're a little surprised. In any case, that's Vincent. That God's will may tell us to do things that would be the last thing if we had our choice we to do. God is full of surprises. He always does the unexpected. And once I realize it's God's will, then I set about doing it.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.